Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready to rumble!
Special technique of shadow boxing.
Greetings, everyone. This is the January 17th, 2021 episode of Boxing Source Radio Show. I'm your host, James Bell, the leader of the Boxing Source on social media. You can follow us through Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just look up the Boxing Source. We are there. We also have a YouTube channel where you can get thoughts about, you know, some stories within the sport of boxing that comes in, the daily or whatnot. And, you know, you'll be able to kind of like share your opinions on those particular topics that do come up through those videos that are posted. Number to dial to get in on the Boxing Talk here is 347-237-5539. 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on cue and you'll be able to talk live on the show. Now, got about a few things that, you know, we're going to, you know, kind of like go through here in this particular podcast. We got some events that are coming up next week. Including like a fight card that's on Wednesday. And also something with the live telecast there is on Saturday as Angela Leo goes up against Stephen Fulton for that WBO version of the the super bantamweight title, right? So you do have that. You will have Reed Salim against Victor Facias in that fight card, and also Rolando Romero, who we've talked about, going up against Justin Pauldo for Rolando Romero's interim WBA title and lightweight. Got about a few things there that we will be talking about in reference to that, but last week we talked about Adrian Broner. Broner, who, has been, in and out of court and things like that. So, but he is supposed to be in the ring February 13th. But we had originally seen if he could be, in that main event there. But he had someone in there scheduling to be his opponent. And, that opponent has basically been, scrapped due to, him testing positive for COVID, Pedro Campa was supposed to be his opponent on February 13th, but he withdrew due to one of his camp members testing positive for COVID-19. So now it seems like Giuliani's that Michelle Rivera could be facing Adrian Broner, for that February 13th date. Now, we did talk about, you know, the co-feature about being Otto All-In Wall-In versus Dominic Brazil. And that would have been a good heavyweight, you know, fight. You know, so, but, you know, at the time being, we got to see if the actual card will happen. They would kind of like show it on Showtime. That, like I said, it would be at, you know, 140 pounds. You know, you're saying that Adrian Broner is, you know, kind of like cut down his weight. You know, like I said, he's been out of action since January of 2019, where he lost to Manny Pacquiao when he came up with that, you know, line of, you know, the next few months. Y'all know I beat that boy. And that is kind of like what we got going on so far as that particular situation. Now, the thing is, like, you know, with that Michelle Rivera is a, you know, young, you know, prospect, someone that, you know, I think a few people feel like is a fairly dangerous opponent of sorts. For Adrian Broner. I mean, Michelle Rivera is a guy that, you know, has that record of 19-0. He had his, you know, recent win over Ladarius Miller, so that was the thing that was going to
Ladies
be...
Ladies and gentlemen.
On there. Real quick, wanted to get in from the 267 area code, checking in. What's going on with you?
What's good?
Oh, man, it's been a minute, man. Been a minute, yo. Just trying to, you know, keep things going out here, man. What's happening with you, man?
Oh, man, slow motion, man. Just waiting for next week boxes, man. The last 2 weeks have been super dry.
Oh, yeah, man. There ain't been nothing going down, you know, over these, you know, previous couple of weeks. So I'm like, yo, what in the world is happening? But, yeah, we got, you know, the fight card coming up with D'Angelo Leo against Stephen Fulton for that WBO super bantamweight title. It was, you know, supposed to happen, you know, back in August. But, you know, we know about the thing with Cool Boy. So now he's back at it, and he's full strength, and he's going to get it in with D'Angelo Leo, man. So, you know, what's been the news about how he's been doing? I know that you're there in the area, so what's happening?
He can beat the shit out of Leo. every report I got back is that, man, he's looking like a savage.
He's beating up like everybody?
They said he's putting it on cats, man.
Oh, man. They're
very strict now because a lot of bouts have been postponed or scrapped because of COVID. Like, the gyms have gotten strict. So I didn't get a chance to go in for his camp.
Yeah.
But, yo, I heard he's looking great, man.
Yeah. Yeah, they kind of like pushing up the whole thing as far as like restrictions are concerned. So, very limited in these buildings and stuff like that. So, yeah, unless if you're able to just contact, you know, him or someone in his camp, then that's how you'll get word of what's going on out there. But, yeah, look, I mean, I didn't know for that fight that, you know, Leo had in his place, I didn't see, like, Angelo Leo being that impressive. You know, when he had his fight against Tremaine Williams. So I was like, come on, man. Like, yeah, Stephen Fulton, I feel like he's going to, yeah, just beat him down, man.
Yo, it's going to be easy work. Scooter has a very underrated resume. He's knocked off Chad. I mean, this was early on. Like, he knocked off Josh Greer early.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, man, that was, and almost, well, that was about more than 5 years ago where he took out Josh Greer, you know? He's had like a a few other guys that have been on his resume. He's had a few guys that were unbeaten in there, and also like guys that are very experienced. So he was able to take care of business against those guys. And then when he had that fight with that for that IBO title, that guy was 27-2. So that kind of shows how much he's been putting in work against guys that have had a lot of experience in the ring.
A question, right? What do you think Leo brings to to the table?
I don't know. I can't like put a finger on what would be his like best attribute that he would be able to bring into the ring against Stephen Fulton. Like I just can't figure out one thing. I'm seriously, man. Like, yo, like,
I'm not just gonna give you the pressure. I think he has good body work. He was like, I don't know, man. Yeah, hit me with the white tights.
Yeah, I just don't see anything. I just don't, man.
Do you think that the championship experience has helped Leo, or do you think it would have been the same outcome if they like they fought for the vacant as is now?
Man, only with that way. He only just had that one fight against Williams, and unless if like maybe in his fight against Cesar Juarez, that could be something that people could build off of. But I outside of that, I can't like put a finger on a fight that I could point out to that Angelo Leo was had that could just say that he would be very tough out for Stephen Fulton.
Matt just hit me up in the chat. I forget. Matt just hit me up in the chat and asked me, was Boots going to fight Lipinen?
Boots and Lipinen?
Yeah.
Ooh. How soon?
I don't know. Matt was asking me. I told Matt, like, I got to make a phone call. Like, I don't even know by tonight. I was supposed to go down to the gym this week, but I'll probably go Tuesday. And I'll either have the answer definitively tonight or Tuesday.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, like, had Boots, first round, I think, no contest. So he wants to get right back in the ring ASAP. But,
perfect opponent, bro. If that's true.
So, yeah, I think I'd like to see what happens with the IBO title situation, too. So they may, just say if they're going to put him with that type of belt and see if he can win that title, then that might be a little factor. Let me get in from the 205 area code. Should be Mr. Mike Grady. What's going on?
What's going on, James? What's going on, Jameer? How y'all fellas doing?
Hey, how's it going?
Oh, we all good, man. Y'all good. Just looking ahead to this fight card on Saturday, man. I know we got Stephen Fulton and Angelo Leo main event for that super bantamweight title. We also got everybody, guy that we love to hate, Rolando Rivero, gonna be in action.
Who's he fighting?
Man. He's fighting some dude, Justin Paldo, man. Maybe, I don't know, man. Maybe they should just take him out. Maybe they should just take him out and say, what we're gonna do is televise a impromptu sparring session with Rolando Rivero and Bud Crawford.
Yeah, that wouldn't go well.
Do that. Yeah. Bud just said, yo, I just want to spar you, man. I just want to teach you a lesson, bro.
That would worry me when a guy like Bud says that. He seems like one of those guys that enjoys beating up on somebody. And Rolly is ass, man. Rolly is just ass. I don't even want to get into it. Go ahead, Mike.
He seems like the type that enjoys beating up on what now?
He just seems like the type of person that enjoys beating on your ass. You ever see Anthony Joshua knows he got you hurt and he starts to stick his tongue out? Like that.
Yeah, yeah. when you finally get his company.
Yeah.
But, I agree. However, it would be nice to see Bud do that to somebody who has the ability to lay him out back, you know what I'm saying, who has the ability to hurt him back. You know, I'm tired of seeing him as a front runner. I want to see him with a 50-50 fight and see him endure. Like, you know, he's endured, don't get me wrong, I'm not belittling the fact that he has, went through some adversity and definitely passed it, but I'm kind of tired of seeing these guys fight people that they're supposed to be. Like, let's see something happen that might be unexpected. You know, like, Keith Thurman would be a great fight for Terrence Crawford. John Porter would be a great fight for Terrence Crawford. Danny Garcia would be an acceptable fight. Ugas would be a step, you know, in the right direction against the other guys he'd have fought.
In retrospect, he should have fought Ugas, took the WBA, and then he would have been elevated to the super champion. And now he's bringing equal belts in the unification bout or undisputed bout for Earl Spence. I think that was a mistake.
Yeah, it would have forced the WBA's hand, actually. As it would have said, hey, I mean, you have someone that's held the super title in Manny Pacquiao, but he hasn't defended since July of 2019. So, what are you going to do? Are you going to, defend this title, or are you going to relinquish it? So, if you defend a title, you would have to defend it against Bud Crawford. So, yeah, he should have, went ahead with that. But it kind of like goes into, I guess someone like kind of said that if there's like a whole bunch of guys that are being mentioned as possible opponents for a guy, usually the last person that's mentioned is the one that they are ending up fighting, or the one that they don't mention at all is the one that they end up fighting. So that kind of is, what the situation was with Terrence Crawford when it came to, him fighting Toe Brooks. So, but as far as like right now, man, I'm sensing a buyout. There's got to be some type of a buyout working, because otherwise, I don't see why he would be over in the AT&T Stadium for that fight unless like a buyout is in the works.
I know a meeting when I see one, man. People like, oh, Bud went there to watch the fight. The hell if he did. That was a meeting.
Yep. That was a meeting. So he, of course, he was, out there in the locker rooms or something like that, either talk with, I don't know if Al Heyman would be there or maybe a Tim Smith, some representative is out there for him in boxing to talk with him. So, hey, yeah, I feel like a buyout is coming.
And let me tell you this, that's not the only meeting that he's had. I know for a fact that he met with Eddie. And this is before meeting with Al at the AT&T Stadium.
Met with Eddie?
Yep. I can tell you the fight now.
Go ahead.
Chavez versus Jacobs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he probably went out there. Yeah, he went for that. But he kind of, like, sees how much money, and I kind of, like, mentioned it like the other day. Like, he's seen how much money Mikey Garcia made for fighting Jesse Vargas. Like, yo, if a dude that only had one fight in the welterweight division and lost and didn't have a fight until a year later is able to pull off $7 million, hey, they still got money rolling out there, man. It's like, why not? But, I mean, maybe fights of Mikey Garcia. Who knows? But that could be possible.
Mikey just needs to go ahead. Mikey just needs, you know, and you know what's crazy is that Mikey would have made the 135-pound division very exciting if you add him to it. If you add him to it, now you got matchups that you like, oh, I can't wait to see that. Mikey at 147 is a plain movie, you know. Extra oil. So it's soggy? Yeah.
Man, he's about as basic as a McDonald's hamburger in the 147-pound division.
You're talking about the old school drink. Yeah. Super basic. With the power to really hurt his opponent. Mikey's ass. He has very basic skills.
Yep.
But his power, you know, his power makes him formidable at the lower weight. Because while it's basic, he doesn't do anything to lose the fight. And once he hits you with a clean shot, he can put you away at the lower weight.
Yep.
And Errol Spence was walking right through that shit.
Yep.
He's like, don't.
Like, he's dealing with guys that are coming down from like 170 plus to make 147. So, he could have a good number of interesting fights at 135. He could have a few good interesting fights at 140. You know? So, but he just wants them, you know, higher guarantees, I guess, at 147 pounds right there, man. But, yeah, they had that. And what is this thing? And I think, what is it, for the 23rd? Yeah, he got, like, you know, Ray Salim going up against Victor Casillas. Like I said, you know, he... Ray Salim was like training over in Las Vegas, so he, you know, wants to see if he could get in there at, you know, 122-pound division and kind of like make some moves there. But 122 is kind of like looking kind of interesting since, you know, we got word about, you know, Ray Vargas, man. Ray Vargas is moving up to 126. And, you know, he could possibly be put in as the number one contender for that title that Gary Russell Jr. has. So you got somebody 5'10" going up to 126 after being at 122.
Who's Ray Vargas signed to?
He should be there under, yeah, he should be on the PBC. He's been on the PBC for a bit. He used to be on the Golden Boy.
Oh, so that fight should definitely happen.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's a good fight.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that would be a good little scrap there between, you know, those two guys. And they'll see how Vargas could, you know, deal with the inside pressure of Gary Russell Jr., man. He's there 34-0. But he might get broken down in that joint.
No disrespect. I've already seen his ass with him. Sorry. Gary's too fast. If you do not have any other dimension, if you aren't playing Hoji, you're going to get your ass hit. He's a Philly Lomachenko. Nah, he's a cheesesteak Hoji. He got a lot of dimensions to him. If you're playing Hoji, Gary's going to treat you.
He'll beat you down on the inside, man. But that just looks like that'll end up being a fight for Gary Jr. This year, in the next few months or next couple months or so, because we know about everything that kind of like fell through for him. So he's gonna still be there, 126 pounds, man. And that's what's gonna basically happen now. I'm trying to see what other thing is out there happening. I know that JoJo Diaz says that he I think his fight is kind of like falling through, where he was supposed to defend his title against that the guy's name was Shavkatsin Rakhimov or whatever it was, right? So yeah, they look like that's going to fall through, but I heard that Tevin Farmer said, hey, I could come in at 4 weeks' notice. What's up?
Yeah, he definitely said that. I doubt that happens, though. It seemed like he's actively avoiding that fight. That's what it seems like to me. He just doesn't want to give that man his rematch.
Yeah, and that's what I was unfortunate. Yeah, and I'm like, wait a minute. So that thing against Diaz, that wasn't a mandatory defense. That was a voluntary defense. So how is it that you can't have a rematch when that was a voluntary defense? So, yeah, it's looking like JoJo Diaz is not real interested in having that rematch.
Yeah, that's not a good look. That's not a good look either, bro. That's not a good look because you have to, unless the other guy is a champ too, like Tio doesn't have to necessarily give him Lomachenko a rematch because it was a unification. But if you were a challenger, and you are going up against a champion, you gotta give him a chance to get a smoke back. Yeah, that's not a good look at all. He's like, and who does that to try to fight a mandatory? What is, like, you ever heard? Most guys don't want to fight their mandatory, but dudes like JoJo Diaz and Triple G really want to face their mandatory. It's weird.
Yeah, like nobody's really kind of like heard of this, Shavkat Rakhimov guy as far as like, how he was able to get, get that mandatory position or whatever it is. So it's like, what's up with all of this? I mean, he's kind of rated up there. He's 15-0. Let me see. I can't even. I looked up something on the record. I'm like, yeah, I don't even know how to. You talk about something that Shavkat Rakhimov, kind of difficult saying that name. This dude, he was the IBO super featherweight champion, I guess. So maybe that kind of like, puts him up there as far as like the IBF rankings, but. Yeah, outside of that, I can't really recognize but one name that's on his resume that he's fought. So I don't see why JoJo Diaz can't end up fighting Tevin Farmer in that case. I was trying to see what other things is out there shaking, man. I know that Josh Warrington claims that he wants to, that he said that he might vacate his IBF title, but that's just talk to me, man. Because when I like looked at the like commentary about that, I'm like, man, first of all, you had multiple times where you could have unified the belts and you didn't even do it. This was like before this whole lockdown stuff happened, and so now. since you're, you know, all of a sudden you can't unify against Kanzu, you're just saying, oh, now I have to fight my mandatory, which would be, you know, the same tooth that he fought one of the last time for the mandatory defense. Oh, man, you're not going to go ahead and fight Gary Russell Jr. if you haven't done it already.
No, I don't believe it either. I don't believe it at all.
Yeah, that's just kind of like hogwash to me as far as like that's concerned. He's just, you know, basically just kind of like pulling up hot air when it comes to that. Because, like I said, I mean, you had multiple opportunities to have that unification bout ever since you won the belt, and you didn't do it. So, like, why are you even talking about it now, you know?
Because it sounds good. It sounds like he wants to face the best, but you and I both know that that's not the case.
Yep, because I'm like, if you're gonna go ahead and have a fight where you did win the title against Lee Selby, basically the same day that Gary Russell had, you know, defended his title, and y'all couldn't even come up with the unification after that, then nah, you weren't really interested in doing any type of education now, man. Also, like, over the past week, we were talking about something in reference to Demetrius Andre, like, he's being mentioned as far as, like, who would he end up fighting next. And, of course, you know, he was, you know, originally slated to fight, like, Dusty Harrison, and nobody was really buying into that fight, and that fight got scrapped anyway. But then... now he's kind of like being mentioned as a potential opponent for Gennady Golovkin, who, as you mentioned, did have an IBF mandatory. But Golovkin kind of like had that mandatory defense in order to try to get another fight with Canelo Alvarez, man. And I don't see that happening because Canelo looks like he's going to still try to go forward with that fight against Adney Yildirim. And then after that, try to unify at super middleweight. So why aren't they having this fight between Demetrius Andre and Gennady Golovkin at middleweight to unify? Like, it looks like one party isn't interested in making that fight happen. And we kind of, like, know who that is. You know, that's just... But it just goes back to what I've been saying, man. Like, Gennady Golovkin is basically, you know, in there for the funds. And he got off on a good deal, though, because if he has, like, a percent stake in the zone, he did that before they even expanded, you know. So now they have a huge expansion, and he's getting a piece of that. I was like, man.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. You're right.
Yeah, man. Like, he got in, and when he was signed, he, you know, had that particular deal going. And, you know, after that, now you have this announcement that, you know, they're in over 200-plus countries, and that just gives DAZN, you know, a huge boost as far as, like, subscribers of what they can get. And he's getting a piece of that, too. So I was like, man. That was kind of he basically got away with something right there with that, you know. But as far as like his next fight, I just don't see him fighting Demetrius Andre, and I feel like they'll kind of like create another opponent for him to have, whether it's at 160 or 168 pounds or catch weight, for him to have to keep him busy there. So he might, like, I don't know. They might come up with something for him, so to speak, man. But
as long as he has that deal, right, where he's getting where he's an equity stake.
Yeah,
you can't have him get stopped by somebody good and still have an equity stake in the company. Like, you need him, and like, he can't, like, man. You saw what happened with Sergey Dzerzhinchenko, y'all. He was about to get stopped. The ref kind of saved him. He was about to get stopped. So if he loses to a guy like Demetrius Andre, they would rather sacrifice him to like a guy like Jaime Munguia,
yep,
that who's a young guy that they could possibly do something with, even though I think Jaime Munguia is absolutely garbage. But he's young enough to wear as though they can build off of that. But like Triple G, like, bro, it's a wrap. But let me go, Jay. Thanks for having me. I appreciate you.
All right. Yeah, man, it looks like, you know, the thing with Golovkin, man, he may end up fighting Jaime Munguia. They've been talking about that as far as, like, you know, his possible next opponent. They're at 160 pounds, and instead of having a, you know, a thing there where he could, you know, basically unify the division. I don't see why he can't unify the division in that case, man. It's just kind of messed up that, you know, Golovkin is still able to, you know, have these quote-unquote safe bouts there until he gets something where he has, I guess, another fight with Canelo Alvarez or something where he could, you know, make a lot of money off of a fight first. So looks like they just want to put him, you know, have him out there chilling until, you know, they get him that particular opportunity, man. But, you know, that's basically, you know, what's there with Gennady Golovkin. But Andre, he needs that type of fight because he hasn't had a big, you know, a big fight out there that he could show, you know, what he could basically do against a high-level opponent. They're trying to see if they could put him in against Liam Williams, and you know, not many people know much about Liam Williams outside of, you know, the thing there over in the UK, but you know, he's had you know, a few fights where he's been at or around world title contention, but you know, Liam Williams has, you know, kind of like fell short a couple of times there, you know, against Liam Smith. He had two fights against Liam Smith, but you know, outside of that, he hasn't really been in a position to fight for a world title. So I guess they're trying to see if they can make him an opponent for Demetrius Andre while Gennady Golovkin gets, I guess, put in a bout against Jaime Munguia, which was actually a potential opponent for Golovkin a few years ago, but that kind of like fell through. So. No, that's basically, you know, that's what, you know, that particular situation is right now at this point. You know, outside of that, you know, like Mill was saying earlier, there really isn't, you know, that much, you know, that much action going on there in boxing here for, you know, this week. Everybody's looking ahead to what's happening over the next couple of weeks. February 13th has, you know, a good amount of action in it. You're going to see, you know, Caleb playing against Caleb Truex there. And then also Patrick Teixeira against Brian Carlos Castaño for that WBO Super Welterweight title, which could set up something where the winner faces Jermell Charlo for the undisputed championship at Super Welterweight. Then also you have the thing with, you know, Joe Smith Jr. Going up against Maxim Vlasov. So yeah, that's, well, actually, take that back with the Caleb Plant. That's on the end of this month. So that's like 2 weeks from now, the Caleb Plant versus Caleb Truex. Then, you know, that February 13th just has like a good amount of action on it. Like I said, Teixeira versus Castaño, Joe Smith Jr., fights for the WBO light heavyweight title against Maxim Vlasov. You got Richard Comey against Jackson Marinez at lightweight. So there's a, you know, good amount of action there February 13th, but we got to see what happens here next week with the 23rd having some action also on the 22nd. But yeah, outside of that, really not much going on within the sport there, but I know that they had, like, they're still having some things going on with this Tyson Fury-Deontay Wilder thing. One of the things that I kind of like heard around the thing is that it's a possibility that Shelley Finkel is not with Deontay Wilder anymore as a manager. Have to see if that's confirmed anywhere, but yeah, I haven't seen anything to where that news has been confirmed that Shelley Finkel is no longer the manager for Deontay Wilder. I mean, we've known about Deontay Wilder parting ways there with one of his trainers, Mark Breland, but outside of that, really haven't heard that much news. And as far as like a third fight between him and Tyson Fury is concerned, we really haven't heard much about that. Everything has been like Tyson Fury has moved on and that he's going to go ahead and try to get a fight in there with Anthony Joshua sometime later this year. But, you know, we haven't really heard any updates as far as like what is the actual thing that's going to, you know, go on for that. So that's, you know, pretty much most of the news that's been going on right now. Like I said, you haven't seen anything for Adrian Broner if he's going to actually have a fight February 13th because the original opponent got scrapped. So we're going to see if that does come through here in the next week or so, because that's, you know, like I said, less than 4 weeks away. So that's basically what I have there, man. Mike, you had anything to add into the boxing talk for this week?
I mean, nothing that I can think of.
Yeah, gotcha there. Yeah, there really isn't, like I said, there wasn't really much news, circulating around here other than, you know, like I said, the Adrian Broner news. I did say, mention something in reference to Canelo, but he might have a deal being in the works to be on his own for, you know, the next two fights. But, you know, that was kind of like talked about immediately after his victory over Callum Smith anyway, that he would go ahead and just get the fight in with Abner Yildirim. And then after that, see if he could go for a unification against Billy Joe Saunders. So that would be like a, you know, another two-fight deal there for Canelo Alvarez. But, you know, so he trying to, you know, get the fight with Abner Yildirim on February 27th. And then once that's done, try to go ahead and face Billy Joe Saunders on May 8th, you know. So that was the thing about that. So that's pretty much, what we have. This is like, you know, kind of like one of the shortest podcasts that we've had on here, you know. Wanted to get in for like about an hour, but this is like much less than that. Like I said, I really wasn't looking at doing much for, you know, this week and last week as far as like podcasts were concerned, because, you know, there wasn't really much action to talk about, you know, over the previous 2 weeks. And, you know, news hasn't really gone down as far as like any fights being made or solidified or anything like that outside of, you know, what, the thing for Matchroom Boxing, including the rematch between Povetkin and Dillian White set for March 6th. But outside of that, really, not that many big events there, with the exception of maybe Lawrence Okoli against Christoph Wolacki for the WBO Cruiserweight title. But I'm just looking forward to seeing what happens in that rematch with Dillian White and Alexander Povetkin. I say it's like do or die for Dillian White. Like, if he can't beat Alexander Povetkin in this rematch, then he might as well call it a day. You know, because he got knocked out in the first fight, and if he can't win this second fight, yeah, he might as well call it a day for him.
Well, I think he was winning the fight. I think he was winning most interactions, maybe like 70, 75% of the interactions in the first fight. He just got lazy. You don't think he was winning most of the interactions?
He was. It was just that he was just going through the motions too much, you know?
At some point.
And like if you're supposed to be a guy that is a highly ranked contender for a world title, and you know that Alexander Povetkin is supposed to be in the tail end of his career, and you got to make a statement that says, "Hey, I'm going to go in here, I'm going to take this guy out, I'm going to clearly win this fight, and then I'm going to be, you know, going after these world champions." Because I mean, this is Dillian Whyte where, you know, he had a shot to, you know, fight Anthony Joshua, and he passed on it. And, you know, by passing on it, he went on ahead to have his fight against it was the thing there where he fought, where's the thing, for that interim title, and you had the whole thing behind that where, you know, he kind of got tested positive for a substance and he was able to, you know, get his thing going where he was still able to fight. So when he fought Oscar Rivas in that fight, then he did that, but then they kind of like had him in limbo, and then once they fully cleared him, he went ahead and fought Marius Wach, and when he fought Marius Wach, it was kind of like a semi-lethargic performance against Marius Wach. So he was kind of like having those signs of where he's not, you know, fully investing himself in, you know, fighting these guys and beating guys that he's supposed to beat. So, yeah, even though he did score two knockdowns against Alexander Povetkin, it wasn't like he was blowing right through Alexander Povetkin. It was more of like him going through the motions, Alexander Povetkin not really blocking that many punches, you know, but still in there, still, you know, right in front of Dillian Whyte. So that's how he, you know, basically got caught. So he can't be lazy in this fight here on March 6th, or else I said it before, if he loses to Alexander Povetkin, he might go down to the level of a Derek Chisora, man.
Yeah, but he can always beat Chisora. Or at least.
Yeah.
Conventional wisdom says that. He just can't.
Yeah.
When he fights, what's his name again? I think he needs to harness him winning every interaction because, you know, I'm going to relate this, but the only way I'm relating this is just to say the point that I'm going to make. But Floyd Mayweather fighting Canelo Alvarez, when they fought, Floyd Mayweather pretty much won almost every interaction, every engagement that they did. And so as long as he just seeks to do that in the fight and make sure he don't go crazy when it's time, like when he feel like it's time to stop him or whatever, and get pretty much gassed or whatever, I think he'll be okay. Did he get gassed in that fight? I don't remember.
Not in this fight, but I mean he did have you know, some little, you know, his energy kind of like went down in his fight against Oscar Rivas in that Joseph Parker fight.
So when he tried to stop, what's his name, when he hurt him and he tried to jump on him, he wasn't tired after that and like sluggish from like trying to pounce on him?
Who, with Povetkin?
When Dillian Whyte hurt Povetkin, did he try to pounce on Povetkin? And after he tried to pounce on him, did he get tired? Similarly to how
Nah. He didn't pounce. He didn't pounce on Povetkin in either instance. He was just, you know, like throwing a jab and just kind of like keeping the distance or whatever it is, just scoring points, kind of like playing it safe. He didn't go for the gusto in that instance.
I think that favored him because, you know, he's very similar to Anthony Joshua. And pretty much most every other heavyweight. This happened to Deontay Wilder as well, where he tried to explode on his opponents, and then he got tired. I question if Deontay Wilder's still doing his sprints and stuff, because his win is different, you know, than it used to be.
Well, I think he did mention that he doesn't like running, so he probably cut that down a good amount, there. But, well, the thing is, like I said, with heavyweights, man, a lot of them, if they use, like, a lot of energy to try to take out an opponent and they don't, then they're going to be really tired. It takes out a lot of energy for them. So, in the case with Dillian Whyte, with him scoring the knockdowns, like, he could have, you know, tried to go for it all, but he didn't do that. Just because he kind of, like, banked on, you know, just still doing the things that he was doing in those previous three or four rounds to, you know, score against Povetkin. But the thing is with Povetkin still has that experience. And I say he has more overall experience than Dillian Whyte does. So with Povetkin, like, catching him the way that he did, that's kind of like what Povetkin has in him. So I don't even think that Dillian Whyte kind of, like, watched for those type of moves out of Povetkin. You know, I don't think he studied them that well. I thought he kind of, like, just said, you know what, I'm going to go in there. This guy is on the downturn. Like I was saying before, he's on the downturn of his career. He doesn't have much left. And I'm going to just, you know, go in there and just handle business. When Povetkin, who was on the same card that Dillian Whyte was on, he fought Michael Hunter on that card. And I felt like Michael Hunter should have been able to take out Alexander Povetkin, especially with the start that he had in the first couple of rounds. But it ended up being a draw because Michael Hunter just didn't do what was needed in order to push himself above what Povetkin was doing. So kind of like left Povetkin out there to, you know, have a fight there against Dillian Whyte the last year. And like I said, if Dillian Whyte doesn't really completely take over in this instance, he's not going to be in a good shape here if he ends up losing to Alexander Povetkin again. That's, you know, like I said, that's all of, you know, what I have here so far, man. You know, I'll see what happens within the next few days or so, and then we'll get, you know, back at it here on the 24th, where action picks up. Like I said, you do have the fights that are going to be over in the Mohegan Sun Casino, headlined by Stephen Fulton against Angelo Leo for that WBO super bantamweight title. So we're gonna, you know, get right back at it after that particular fight. But until then, folks can catch up with us through the social media pages and through the YouTube channel for any news updates on there. And just with that, closing this particular episode, and like I say at the end of every show, Corner Boxing is a hit, and I can hit, not a standing trade. On that note, folks, I'm out. Have a good evening.